Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
This is the January 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from Midwest Market Solutions in Watseka, Illinois, Angie Setzer of Citizens Grain out of Charlotte, Michigan, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us anytime you'd like on demand at willag.org, or of course, you can listen to us on one of your favorite podcast applications, including Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, SoundCloud, Stitcher, NPR One, even Spotify. Let's begin by asking Angie Setzer of Citizens Grain this question. Angie, first, I'd like to know, because it's been a while since we've talked to you, about what you do there at Citizens Grain and where you're located.
We are located in Charlotte, Michigan, which is just south and a little west of Lansing. South central Michigan is what I say. I grew up in, and I guess everyone fights over what central Michigan is, but we're right in the middle of the mitten, I guess you could say, to the south of it. And here I manage 5 elevator locations, including 1 state-of-the-art food-grade non-GMO soybean facility where we do exporting the bulk of that overseas. And then we also manage a very large direct ship program. So basically I buy from the farmer, sell direct to the end user, kind of make some markets on the cash side in that respect. And, you know, work with farmers all over the state and throughout the Corn Belt to kind of help them improve their marketing and make better decisions and when it comes to how they generate that revenue on their farm.
And it's probably important. Most people may recognize your name if they're Twitterer followers, although they'll probably recognize your handle, which is at Goddess of Grain. Very nice handle, by the way. quite memorable, I have to admit. So tell me about Michigan and what conditions you've been working under since fall harvest there.
Is duress a condition that we've been working under? It's really been one of those things where 2019 was not friendly to anyone, and it felt like it was a extra, you know, not friendly to us right here. And in our specific trade zone right here in Eaton County, in particular, where we are, our overall production was down, you know, nearly cut in half from a year ago, simply because of the prevented plantings and things of that nature. You know, several thousand acres in our area didn't get put in, and that what did get put in went in late. You know, we had corn that actually went in June 28th of last year and made grain. It got delivered into the elevator at about 32% moisture this past fall. So we dealt with less than ideal conditions. I thought 2018 was one of the worst soybean harvests that we would ever see. And 2019 definitely topped that. Minimum moisture levels, you know, on the downside for someone that was coming direct out of the field, you know, they were 15%. They were lucky. Most of them came off 18 to 22 or higher, until things kind of froze up. The best bean harvest weather actually came the week of Christmas, which I hope I never, ever say that ever again. Corn quality was horrible. Most of it went in late. A lot of it was light. The heat units just absolutely shut off the very middle part of September. And so we got a long finish before frost, but we didn't get much heat to go along with it. So we didn't get the early frost that we were worried about, but we also didn't get any sort of additional help in kind of finishing the crop. So most of it came off 30-35%. It breaks when you look at it sort of deal. Low test weight around 51 pounds or so has kind of been the norm. It's not the absolute every single person out there has that, but it is, you know, pretty widespread across the state, you know, the poorer crop conditions. And so as a result, we are seeing several of the elevators or end users that we work with actually discovering that they're having a hard time keeping their corn in good condition. And, you know, that's starting to cause a little bit of a a weird sort of setup in the cash grain pipeline, you know, structure for us here with some of these end users that, you know, would traditionally be taking in and grinding a certain amount of corn, just trying to grind their way out of a problem, or dumping it into a different end user just simply because they need to get it off site and moved through. So it's caused some unique issues. Farmers are hearing about that and a little bit more willing to part with their grain as a result because of that fear of the unknown when it comes to quality. So we've seen, you know, steady corn movement because of that. And then we also have a behemoth of a crush plant coming on about 50 miles to our north. It's going to be crushing about 40 million bushels of soybeans a year once it's running. And so that's thrown a whole new fun unknown into the mix as well, with basis levels firming, you know, 30, 40 cents from normal values, just with the idea of that coming on and really trying to suck up what was a much smaller crop than normal, you know, in the area.
Ellen Dearden from AgriView, do you have a question for Angie?
I sure do. Angie, what is the feeling in your area with this new NAFTA supposedly going to be signed by Canada really pretty shortly? I figured that some of your grain has to move north.
Yeah, a lot of our grain, you can see it. We kind of have a back and forth to the east there at Blue Water Bridge or through Windsor on the Detroit side of things. It's been a unique year again. I mean, in that respect, too, simply because of Canada with the TPP. So a lot of people forgot that was even a thing, right? But they signed the TPP, and that kind of created this whole new export market structure that wasn't there for, you know, a lot of Ontario wheat producers in the past. So we've seen a lot of wheat being exported. We did see a smaller than anticipated corn crop there as well. So that has created a new feed wheat market in Ontario. For us on the Canadian trade, typically our corn goes east and their wheat comes west. So we kind of flop back and forth, but this year it's really kind of limited the corn going east because the market structure has been so strong. You know, it's really trying to actually make it move west this year, which is quite unexpected. Our west side feeders are definitely, you know, a couple of them are still posted 50, 60 over, you know, over in the Holland area there. So that's keeping the corn, you know, in the mitten, I guess you could say. But having the new NAFTA signed is always a good thing, or having NAFTA or whatever, having free trade in place has always been somewhat of an ease of business. We tend to kind of go back and forth quite a bit. And, you know, with Ontario, it's almost like another state for us. In fact, I would say that trade is almost more unencumbered when it comes to going into Ontario or buying grain from Ontario than it is even going south, except for maybe into like the Toledo area or something like that. We just traditionally have a pretty good back and forth, and that'll maintain. It's good to know that that'll be maintained and that there isn't a concern there, but it'll definitely be interesting to watch, you know, how Canada continues to benefit to a certain extent from the signing of that TPP.
I don't know whether you'll know the answer to this, because the 11 nations of the TPP do not include anybody going to the east or across the Atlantic, really. Where is the wheat being shipped to?
Yeah. Typically, it ends up going, it's through their Hamilton market is what they say. And honestly, I imagine it ends up going towards the Vancouver port, if I had to.
Oh, it goes the other way. Okay.
It goes east. It goes, you know, it ends up going west a very long way. But yeah, it ends up moving that direction eventually.
Yeah, just as a reminder, the TPP nations, which is not quite called TPP. I don't remember what the first two letters are anymore, but Australia, Brunei, Chile, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, Japan, Malaysia, Canada, and Mexico. Brian Stark, do you have a question for Angie?
Yeah, I'm curious, in the Michigan area, given the late nature of harvest just across the Corn Belt in general, if you see any or heard from your producers about acreage intentions going into the spring of 2020. I don't know how much field work was able to be done, but do you see any major shift between corn and bean acres coming up this spring?
No, I think the wild card for us is, you know, what guys are anticipating or what folks are anticipating to have happen with the Zeeland plant coming online in Ithaca. Most of the customers that I talk to are a little bit disappointed because they didn't get the wheat acres in that they wanted to this fall. So that's actually increased the kind of wild cards that they're looking at when it comes to corn and beans. When I talk to a lot of feed dealers and stuff like that, they're saying that they're anticipating a pretty large increase of corn acres, you know, around this neck of the woods, guys switching back over. And that would make sense. Last year, there were a lot of bean acres that were intended to go in as beans that, you know, didn't. And so it would make sense that they would kind of switch back into maybe that corn this year or something like that. But in addition, the market's still telling them to grow corn, and everyone has such a short memory. They tend to really look at what was taking place or what has been taking place over the last 18 months or so. And that is, you know, epic corn basis values and, you know, selling cash at harvest time at 4.25 or so. So I do anticipate an increase in corn acres just with where things stand today. But I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see soybeans kind of become the dark horse in that sense, just with the, you know, if we could get a bean rally. 916 soybeans are not doing anything to convince growers to grow beans. So, you know, if we were to get back up to where we were in that 950 to 980 sort of range on futures, then I think you may see some folks change their minds. But right now it does look like we're leaning heavy towards corn.
Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions, a question?
We are seeing, like you said, grain move in different directions. And the feed part, are you finding enough corn to meet the feed markets? Are you substituting wheat? I know another person said that wheat in, like I say, Minnesota was being used to take care of feed needs. And then what would you say your long-range thoughts are on basis, say, getting into, say, June, July, August?
Yeah, we're not seeing too much here locally of additional wheat feeding. Simply because wheat basis has remained relatively strong and we haven't had what would be a feed wheat quality crop really over the last couple, 3 years. We've actually had a short crop the last 2 years for sure, just with the reduction in planting, first monetarily driven in 17 and then 18 was weather. So we had a two kind of smaller crops in a row, and then 19 is definitely going to be much smaller. So basis values in the millers around here for wheat is in the 50 over range, you know, so with the recent futures rally there, most feeders are looking at the fact that $6 cash wheat just doesn't pencil from a feeding standpoint. So we're a little bit different than the spring wheat folks, for sure. So we don't see a significant amount of wheat feeding on that side, but we are seeing feeders are meeting their needs at this point in time when it comes to corn, but it wouldn't surprise me to see a need for basis to stay strong, if not strengthen, as we work our way into the summer, especially if we see some of these easier to buy bushels getting shipped. You know, if folks are running into quality issues and moving grain into the pipeline or something like that, then, you know, basis obviously will be a bit weaker. It is right now. Most of the feeders that I'm working with are relatively full and comfortable with what they have. But like I said, I've got a couple different we had three different issues arise. We have one feeder lose a 750,000 bushel bin, the quality of it. So they've got to grind through it or get it shipped out. They just can't keep it. They have not found a way to keep it. So they basically shut down inbound while they manage that. Had another feeder have a very similar problem with a smaller bin. And then we had a fire at a feeder in Allegan where they lost 250,000 birds. So they're grinding a significant amount less than where they were before. So feeders are able to get what they need, but they're also the ones that are maintaining a pretty strong market value versus the ethanol players. I envision that staying. The biggest question for basis for us going forward is, what does futures do? Does it stay flat or go lower? You know, does it come up a bit? Because then that starts to pressure what these cash guys are willing to pay. And then obviously, what do ethanol margins look like as we move ahead? You know, are we going to see ethanol players kind of continue to buckle down and try to produce themselves out of a negative margin hole? Or do we see, you know, we did lose the Riga plant last year. Valero shut that one down, and that had a ripple effect and kind of stopped that increase in basis that we were seeing on the countryside. You know, do we see something like that develop in one of the four plants that we still have running? And so that's the wild card, but I don't anticipate much in the way of too much basis weakness, you know, but at the same time, you know, are we going to be trading the 80 plus over that we managed to trade last September? I'm not sure if we're going to get there. If we do get there, it won't last very long, I don't think.
Ellen Dearden there at Morton, Illinois. You're not but a few miles, within 10 miles, of the Illinois River. What does basis look like on the river and the potential for export?
The corn basis is really driven by the ethanol market, so it's kind of hard to tell. But locally, we're seeing a pretty strong basis for corn. Bean basis is really deteriorated by, I'd say, a dime or so since the first week of the year. We're about 22 under right now on bean basis. Corn basis is still 3 over or something thereabouts, but as we go into the new month, they'll probably take that premium off.
Brian Stark is a manager there at the Andersons. What are your expectations for corn basis?
I think corn basis typically we'll see it firm as we get into the spring and summer. Right now, movement's being driven by quality. A lot of corn has been binned outside of harvest at a wetter nature than normal. And obviously quality concerns kind of creeped up a little bit after the first of the year. And I think word spread throughout the country in East Central Illinois that we needed to consider moving. That's compressed basis here moving forward because the end user has as much as he needs. He has deferred coverage to book, but they're living hand to mouth given the above normal movement we've seen here in January. I do suspect that as you get forward, given the quality challenges of the crop, that the spring and summer we will see a very strong basis in the eastern Corn Belt based on the lack of normal supplies, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and kind of that ethanol epicenter. The one thing I mentioned to you on the radio the other day, I think that will keep a potential lid on that, is that some of those facilities have the ability to receive rail. We already know of one trade over Chicago that worked into eastern Indiana already. I think that ebb and flow of potential of arbing corn from the western Corn Belt into the east where grain is to where it isn't could keep a lid on basis, but I still think it'll remain strong just given the lack of overall quality the end user is looking for from this crop.
What impact does the lack of the quality of this corn crop in the United States have on the futures markets? And I made note that the U.S. Grains Council, while it put out a pamphlet on this last week talking about the quality of the corn being good in the United States, it's not as good as last year, and it's not as good as the five-year average as well. So what impact does that have, Merrill?
Well, in 2009, when we had the light test weight corn, we saw feeders having to feed more corn to get the same rate of gain. I've heard some instances in different areas where that is taking place. Usually the USDA doesn't get that taken care of in their supply demands until June, sometimes even later than that, for the quarterly stocks in June. So I see that as being the biggest problem. Right now, it's kind of interesting. The yield from the ethanol grind is running 2.95 and has stayed there for a fair amount of time or through the first part of the season. And watching that closely to see if that finally would have any effect on poorer quality corn. One would think that would be the case, that we would have some sort of effect. But so far, the yield on the ethanol is not showing any problems.
I think that poor quality corn has a very limited impact on the futures. I think it's going to be the whole situation will be on the basis. And, everybody's talked already that we've seen some unusual movements of grain, not just in Michigan, but around the country. And I think that will continue to be. And that's going to be all a basis story rather than a futures story.
I agree 100% that it's going to be a basis story more than a future story. I mean, it could have some impact on our ability to export, or at the very least, we saw that story kind of float around here, late last week or whatever. But the reality is it is going to be basis. You may have some folks offering premiums, but I feel, and I told the customer that the other day, he's got what he feels is decent quality corn. And he said, well, someone's going to have to pay me a premium eventually. And sometimes the premium is built into not getting discounted, and that's what we've seen is the discount structure at some of these ethanol plants and things like that has really increase. We had one local ethanol plant basically double their test weight discount below 53 pounds here, you know, this season, and that hurts a lot of guys. And so they're starting to find a different way to go or a different place to go because they're discovering that they can take a little bit of a hit on the front end, you know, and not have to deal with that massive risk of substantial discount on the back end either. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be more of a basis story, I think, you know, maybe with a little bit of an influence on our ability to export or something like that, you know, meeting quality. But beyond that, I don't know if it'll really play a substantial role in the futures market.
He had number two yellow corn in the bin, and that's what futures trades. So I always have to kind of remind myself of that fact. And I bet, Brian Stark, that you have to remind folks of that a lot, too.
I do. You know, I think, you know, I agree with everyone, what everybody said. It's at this point, it's a basis play. And I think that's the scramble. I think it, when you have a quality challenge crop, your number one corn users turn oftentimes when supplies get tight for good quality to number two sources. And I think that is a basis play for the most part. And that's, I think, where producers could take advantage to some extent as they move forward. But I really see it as a limiting impact on the future side.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about new crop. And I want to know what everybody thinks about potential for acreage and what that looks like going forward at this point. We won't see anything really until the end of the month. There will be some numbers that come out in the ag forum, but I think those probably, well, they probably won't be adjusted so much from what we've seen from USDA already in November. So what's the trade thinking about at this point, Merrill?
I tried to outguess the trade, and I'm looking more like at 94 million on the corn and 84.6 on the beans right now. I think you're going to see increases. I don't know, you're not going to see a whole lot of difference in the rotations, and a lot's going to depend on how early we are able to get the corn out of some of these areas where they're corn is still sitting in the field.
Well, I'm thinking maybe, Ellen, that the real question here is, does it have much of an impact on old crop, even if there are a whole lot of acres for new crop?
I think it has been somewhat limiting on old crop corn with the thought that we will plant 92, 93, whatever the number is, million acres of corn. I think that's kind of been a limiting factor on old crop corn, but I don't think it has an impact on the bean side of things for right now. My numbers, incidentally, are 91 on the corn, so I'm not up there in that 93 range.
Angie, how about your numbers?
Oh, I'm thinking we get end up around 92 or so on corn, and in that, you know, 84, 85. I haven't really pinned it down too much beyond just having the conversation with my growers about what that means when it comes to upside potential for DEES 20 corn. I think that really is going to be something that kind of bogs us down in the short term is the fact is, okay, all you've got to do is figure out how to stretch out, you know, 1.9 billion bushels of corn between now and October, and we'll have, you know, more than enough to kind of get us through sort of deal. And so, yeah, I think it's going to, you know, kind of continue to be the Eeyore in the market structure, the Debbie Downer side of things, where if we're able to get it in at a decent time, you know, and obviously the question is going to be how does the northern portion of the western Corn Belt, you know, with corn still out in the field and stuff like that, and the field work that's been undone there, you know, do you see some sort of reduction going forward? And I think, you know, that might very well be the case. But as a whole, I think, you know, most folks you talk to across the I-States and things of that nature say that the money points to corn, and a lot of my farmers are agreeing with that. So we're being a little bit more aggressive. You know, last year the worry was that we were going to have a substantial amount of soybeans planted and an overwhelming carry out, you know, and on that side. And so we were aggressive relatively early in bean sales there, and it worked out well for us to have done so, you know, even with a shorter crop. And this year we're kind of taking the same approach when it comes to corn is being somewhat aggressive on the sales side of things, you know, 390, 403 or better. And I get a lot of folks who are like, well, don't you think, you know, we could see 4.25 futures? And the reality is we didn't even get to see, you know, DEES 20 trade much above 4.25 when we were 470 DEES 19. You know, it just hasn't had that desire. And so it's going to take some sort of extraordinary circumstance, I think, to really kind of push us beyond that with, with all that's going on. And I think the knowledge that we have now that ethanol is really kind of, I mean, it's there, but the growth that we had grown accustomed to over the last 10, 15 years is not. I mean, in fact, it seems to eventually, you know, maybe look at shrinking as we move ahead. So there's some concern over what demand looks like, you know, outside of the feed realm, too, in my opinion.
Hey, Brian Stark, I'd like to turn your attention to soybeans. A tough day on Thursday, the bean market down 16 cents. I suppose on the idea that coronavirus would allow potentially China not to fulfill parts of its phase one agreement. What problems do you foresee?
I think that's an interesting one. You know, I mentioned the other day that, you know, when you think back to the SARS outbreak in 2002 to 2004, there was a lot of short-term panic given that impact of that virus. And if you think back to the cases back then, there was over 8,000 infections and somewhere around 774 deaths. And, you know, 60% of that originated in China. And I think the theme I've been looking at this point, while it may have some short-term impact on demand, I know that the shutdown that China's put in play right now has had a bigger impact on not just demand, but getting product to a lot of their chickens and some of their livestock operations where they can be fed. So that's an issue in and itself. But long-term demand, it seems like it was limited back then. Short-term panic turned into more stabilization, really didn't have a lot of downside impact for the overall commodity demand. So it's going to play out, and I think this is not to be unexpected because there's such a big push to see when China is going to buy, what are they going to buy, and I think as the market gets cheaper, that allows them to come in and potentially make some of those purchases versus where prices were here, say a couple weeks ago when phase one was signed. So the bean market, I think, still has the most upside opportunity given, you know, the four products that have been discussed that probably will be bought, beans, ethanol, DDG, and then pork. And I think pork obviously stands out as the biggest one, which could only help our domestic usage internally for things like meal and whole corn as well. So a lot to be determined, but I think, you know, at some point when beans find some stabilization here and some of the short-term panic selling subsides from the coronavirus, then I think, you know, beans could make a run here as we head in towards the spring.
Do you agree with that, Merrill?
Yeah, I think right now, you know, we're in February break, the John Deere lows. This is a time pick for crop insurance averages, so it's a low time of the month. I think all this is building up to provide opportunity for if those that want to get long can get long, you know, options or whatever. I think you're going to see a very good opportunity. We've seen the fuel market decimated, and if, as soon as the cash catches up to the drop we've seen in on the board, it'll be a good time to lock in fuel needs. So I just think there's a lot of opportunities here. We always seem to get carried away early when we have these situations. We always have this panic, and panics are usually ripe for buying.
Ellen Dearden, your thoughts on soybeans?
Wow. I mean, I look at this big key reversal down we're going to have for the month of January in beans and makes me kind of nervous. I've got my cycles really point towards a low in June or July for beans. And by that, I just mean that we're not going to see a whole lot of upside in this first half of the year. And I keep coming back to, I've got some highs in August, September, October on beans. Now that's so wrong. You know, that's so counter-cyclical, counter-seasonal. But that's kind of what I'm looking for. So I don't know that we've got a lot of downside risk. Maybe we've got another 50 cents down in beans, but upside potential in the next few months, I think, is going to be pretty limited.
Let's see. How would you build that case? Is it a big crop coming out of South America and finally the Chinese come into the marketplace and begin to buy potentially a little bit earlier than usual? They've done that in the past. It's been a while.
Yeah, it could be. Most of the private estimates have been climbing on the South American crop, particularly the Brazilian crop. So I think the odds are to have a big crop in South America, and the wall of worry really starts building at that stage of the game. The irrational fears over this virus, I think, could linger well into April or so. And that's an awful long time to be looking for stability in this bean market.
Angie Setzer, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I likened it earlier today to the Japanese tsunami. I don't know if we remember that, but we were down 50 cents in a day on that, just out of the idea that everything was gone and there was no demand for soybeans ever again or what have you. And I mean, this has been a little bit slower, but it's been, pretty ugly in that sense. And I just came at the wrong time. So, Ellen's talking about the Brazilian crop and those private estimates creeping up. And we're starting to hear, these 70 bushel a acre soybean yields coming out of the very early harvest stuff in an area that didn't experience really anything in the way of problems once they got the crop planted, so it should be somewhat expected, but it still seems to catch the market off guard. And right in the middle of that, you kind of had the coronavirus fear really hit. And then on top of that, obviously China's on holiday and likely to see that holiday extended. So you're not seeing these purchases that everyone's so hungry to see. So we kind of had a triple whammy. And yeah, I think that the downside risk could be there a little bit longer. But I think once we find that low side, I think we're range bound. And I think if you look at the front months on the soybean chart here over the last basically year or so, or at least recently since about November, really the downside risk came into that low 860, 850 something, with the high side being in that 925, 940 range on the front month. And so that's what I kind of keep harping on my growers with beans in the bin, really kind of pay attention to what the front month range is, get comfortable with that and be a willing seller on the high side, especially with basis as strong as what we've seen it. And if they plan on holding on to these beans, I mean, they're basically being given a pretty decent gift with carry as it is into the July, and, not to assume that it has to be there. I'm really quite shocked by the extent of the drop in the NOV 20. I thought we'd see 950 actually come in as a better support than where it's been. But obviously with the triple whammy that we experienced, and it's been an easy sell. So I do think soybeans, I think growers have an opportunity to get back up above 950 to 980 futures on that, perhaps beyond, depending. But it's just a matter of when. And so that's the waiting's the hardest part, right? And so now we just have to kind of wait until we start to really look at the fact that even with Brazil having a large crop, we're really still on pace to meet our export expectations from the USDA. Crush continues to be pretty strong. Margins continue to improve on that side here with meal exports strong and meal basis starting to firm up a bit. So crush isn't really necessarily going anywhere. And, what does new crop production look like if we are in that, 84 million acres or so and have a okay yielding type year and do see some resurgence in export demand as, China continues to rebuild that hog herd and things like that. So I think there's a lot of case for short-term bearishness, not to mention the fact that, a lot of folks are bearish beans just because they've been saying they're going to trade to $7 for the last 4 years, and we haven't necessarily seen it. I think there's residual bearishness, but I think long-term there's some reasons that we could see some good selling opportunities that farmers will be able to take advantage of.
Just on that, ever since China basically stopped taking DDGs, that's kind of kept DDGs in this country, and they've competed pretty aggressively with your soybean meal. And while your crush for soybean is not maybe as good as what it – just imagine, I guess, is where I'm going to go. If we went back to the 7 million metric tons of DDGs that we sold to China, if they buy that from us, and can you imagine, it will open up the door for the value of soybean meal here in this country. So that's just one of the things, I'm looking at to see help improve bean prices. And if we move that DDGs out of this country, that's another way to help improve our exports and help the corn market. So there are things out there that are just not being talked about. And it really seems to me right now that everybody's leaning to the bear side of the boat because it's almost impossible to find anything positive. But if you look, there are things coming down the road that should happen from the signing with phase one with China. And we haven't even got out of the waiting period. It's a 30-day waiting period from the signing. So I guess I'm looking for things to develop And it's frustrating right now, but I'm looking at things developing to a better, nothing like $5 corn or $13 beans or anything, but I think you're going to see things improve. We're in an election year, and usually things will improve just for the government to get reelected, and Trump needs that from this base. So I guess in my thinking that things are a lot more positive than what we're looking at right now. And I guess I'll use that as my final comment as well.
Well, I guess it is that time. Hey, Brian Stark, a final word from you then.
I think the biggest thing is, you know, corn's been range-bound between 370 and 390. Continue to encourage producers to take advantage when the market approaches the upper end of the range, reducing some of their old crop length and taking advantage of those strong basis markets where they might be able to clear $4 cash.
Ellen Dearden?
Friday, the cattle inventory report, it's a semi-annual report, and after 5 years of seeing growth in the cattle herd, we look for a pullback of about 6 or 7%.
And Angie Setzer.
Yeah, I'm just going to kind of repeat what Brian said there. The range is your friend. The trend is your friend, right? And so I think, you know, if you really look at what has been taking place here recently, you would see that, you know, we are range bound. And so take advantage of the range. Be prepared if you're willing to hold it, you're planning on holding the bushels into the summer months, be booking some futures when you have the opportunity. That in a carry market, you tend to see the front month or the next month in line fall off to where the front month, you know, where that range was. So, you know, there's no guarantee that, you know, you look at the July corn range and it's been 385 to 405 here. And a lot of folks will assume that that's going to be the case when we get to May or June. It's not the case. So be prepared if you are going to be holding it because you like the idea of $4 futures and, you know, feel comfortable that basis will firm, you know, be a willing seller of at least the futures on that side and just be aware of how important the range is going to be. And, you know, same thing on the optimism side. Like we always overdo it to the downside when we have something develop. And right now I would say that the coronavirus is one of the larger unknowns that we've faced in quite some time. And I feel that the unknowns tend to always favor the bear. And so it's going to take us, I feel, at least 10 days to 2 weeks to really get our arms wrapped around what that looks like and whether or not we can get that disease contained. And if we feel comfortable about getting it contained here, in a while, then, you know, we'll feel far more confident in what we're able to do, you know, with the future side of things going forward.
Hey, Angie, one final question for you. Your husband, Carl Setzer, has joined the AgriFizer team at Illinois Farm Bureau. How does he like his job?
He loves it. He's really enjoying it for sure. So I'm jealous of it, honestly. And I tell him that all the time. I'm like, I want to do what you do. So, but he really enjoys being a part of the Illinois Farm Bureau team and the AgriFizer team and surrounded by great people. They've been very welcoming, even to his spouse here. So it's definitely been a good transition for him.
You've been listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, where you can hear the whole of the program. Our panelists for the week have included Angie Setzer of Citizens Grain out of Charlotte, Michigan, Brian Stark of the Andersons from Champaign, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from Midwest Market Solutions in Watseka, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.